This morning is the final worship service in our opening series together since I have come to join you as your pastor here at the United Methodist Church of Anoka. If I haven't met some of you yet, my name is Rachel Warner, and I'm really thrilled to be here serving God together with all of you. And I just want to comment now, this is our fourth Sunday, so I've been about 3 weeks here at the church since we started together on a Sunday, and what a remarkable people you are, United Methodist Church of Anoka. Give yourself a little pat on your shoulder. What a remarkable people and place you are. I have loved spending time in this beautiful sanctuary, which really feels like a set-apart sacred space. And I'm grateful for the people who come through here and keep this space looking so nice and so sacred and ready for our worship together. I am grateful for a gifted and committed and extremely talented staff who work here day in and day out to serve the mission of this church and are really doing an amazing job. I am grateful for the incredible musicians who have shared with us. Are you grateful for them too in this month? Yeah. And I'm grateful for greeters and readers and ushers and folks who are serving on teams. It takes a lot of people each doing their part to keep this place going. And I just want to share my deep gratitude for all of you and all that you do. And how many of you pray for the United Methodist Church of Anoka? Thank you. Because it really is your prayers that keep us all going together. It has been a joy to gather with you here on Sundays. It's been a joy to visit with some of you at meet and greets in your homes and get to know you better. It's been a joy to gather around tables for prayers and meetings and to do the work of the church. So thank you. Thank you for welcoming me and my family to this church and to this congregation and community with your enthusiasm and your kindness. We're so happy to be here. I just wanted to check in on this last Sunday of this first series and let you know we're still happy to be here. So thank you. And this is really what we've been talking about all month, right? Community. What does it take? What does it mean to be a community of people who gather together to serve a purpose, a mission that God has placed upon us in this time and in this place? And so we've been reading the book of Acts together during this month, and we have been learning lessons from the early church and from the ways that the very first followers of Jesus formed their identities as Christians by breaking bread and sharing resources around the table, by praying and sharing and baptizing down by the river, by telling the "you had to be there to believe it" stories of the miracles of Jesus, the teacher, healer, prophet, risen Lord. They told those stories with urgency and enthusiasm, and we've been soaking them up. Table, water, story. That's the quick recap of our first 3 weeks. So if you don't remember anything else, what does it mean to be a community of followers of Jesus? Table, water, story. And today, our final lesson from this book of Acts is about vision. And so we just heard a story read to us about the role of vision in the life of the early Christians. It's also a story about conversion, and a story about community, and a story about belonging together, whether we like it or not. Did you hear me? We belong together, whether you like it or not. It's a story about seeing through the eyes of Jesus, a new kind of vision. Have you heard the story before that Dale read to us this morning? Have some of you heard this story before? It's the story of an infamous character in the time of the early church, Saul, whom we know better in the Christian church by his Greek name, Paul. And I'm going to refer to him as Paul throughout the story because I want us to make this connection between Saul, which was his Hebrew name, his Jewish name, and Paul was his Greek name, but this is one person. And we've already talked about him in this series, and I want to make sure we understand this as the same person. He was a well-known persecutor of the early church. He was known to seek out followers of the way. That's what the earliest Christians called themselves, followers of the way of Jesus. And Paul was a Roman citizen, and he was a Jew, and he worked on behalf of different entities, the government and the church, and he sought out followers of the way. He tracked them down, he harassed them, and imprisoned them for daring to believe and share a movement that had something new to say, something different to say to their time. Eventually, this same person we read about today would become a leader in the Jesus movement. It's kind of hard to believe, right? His whole identity was about tracking down and imprisoning and putting a stop to the Jesus movement. But ultimately, in his life, he would become a leader in that same Jesus movement. He would be traveling around to share the gospel. He would be offering healing and hope to people in the name of Jesus. In fact, we've already met him this month, Paul. 2 weeks ago when we talked about water, do you remember the story? Lydia and her family down by the river in Philippi. And who came along to share the gospel with them? This same guy baptized Lydia and her whole household. And that's only one example of the many, many people whose lives were changed by Jesus because Paul brought them the story and invited them into the movement. Today, we are discovering Paul's sordid past, right? He wasn't always on board with Jesus. He was vehemently against anyone who claimed to follow Jesus. And then one day, on the road to Damascus, where he was headed to track down anyone in the synagogues who might be spreading Jesus talk, that's why he was going to Damascus. He had a letter from the authorities that said he could take to jail anyone who was hanging out in the synagogues telling people about Jesus. So here he goes on the road to Damascus, and it says in the scripture that he was entertaining murderous thoughts. So he's not whistling his way down the road, right? This isn't a zippity-doo-dah moment. He's riled up. He has some power and authority to punish people. He's angry that they would dare talk about Jesus in the synagogue. And he's whispering murderous thoughts out loud under his breath as he travels. He is worked up. And then those murderous whispers are knocked right out of his throat, aren't they? By a bright light and a vision of Jesus. A bright, blinding light, a voice calling out to him by his Hebrew name, Saul. And then instructions that he had to follow if he wished to regain that sight and to understand what was happening to him. For 3 days, he could not see and he could not eat. For 3 days, he lived in darkness and waited for something to happen. 3 days. How many of you hang out at church fairly regularly? Does 3 days sound like a familiar number to you in the life of the church? 3 days. Paul had a vision that blinded him, and he spent 3 days in darkness. And at the end of those 3 days, he was transformed by God from a persecutor of Christians with murderous thoughts on his lips to a primary leader in the Jesus movement. After 3 days in darkness, face to face with his own dangerous thoughts and angry intentions, Paul emerges into the light and is restored to sight. The scales come off his eyes. One might say the tomb was rolled away after 3 days in the darkness. He's restored to sight, but not just the sight he had before he went blind. He is given a new, redeemed vision, an ability to see the way that Jesus sees. Paul's story is a resurrection story of dying to his old ways and being brought to life again, to see the world through the eyes of Jesus. This is how powerful God is. This is the power of God in the world. This is the power of the risen Christ. The power that saves lives and dramatically shifts our focus from what we see through our human lenses to what Jesus sees in our neighbors. But this isn't actually a sermon about Paul. That was just the introduction to the vision I actually want us to think about today and take a lesson from today. Because while Paul was there on the road being knocked down by a bright light and having his vision on the road to Damascus, somebody else was having a vision at the same time, remember? Yeah, his name was Ananias, and he was a follower of the way. He was a disciple of Jesus. He wasn't one of the original 12 disciples who had spent years with Jesus, but he had been brought into the story. Ananias was a follower of Jesus the way we're followers of Jesus, because someone had invited him into the story, welcomed him into the family of faith, and shared with him the life-changing power of Jesus Christ. And he was a believer, and he followed the way, and he absorbed the teachings of Jesus, and he sought to live a good life. It's Ananias in this story who represents the Christian community, who we're trying to take some lessons from on how to approach our world. Ananias was minding his own business in Damascus, living his best life. Things were fine. He wasn't asking for any trouble. He wasn't asking for any big responsibilities. He just wanted to show up on Sundays or Saturdays or whenever they got together and be part of the prayers and part of the music and then just live his good, happy, easy life. That was his plan, and it was working for him. And he was a follower, and he was a good disciple. Then Jesus shows up. Jesus appears to Ananias in a vision and tells him, go seek out Saul, Paul, right? Go lay hands on him and heal his sight. Go seek out Saul. I'm sending him your way. Go find him. Lay your hands on him and heal him. Restore his sight. And Ananias says, wait a minute. What? Are we talking about the same guy? He has two names, so maybe we're mixed up. You're talking about Saul, Paul, that guy who is coming to town for the sole purpose of arresting people like me and taking us to jail? That guy? Yep, that guy. Go find him, lay your hands on him, and heal his sight. And Ananias says, oh, no, 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 no. That can't be what you really mean, Jesus. That guy is enemy number one of the Christian community. Followers of the way hide out from guys like this because he wants to do us harm. Why would you ask me to put myself in harm's way, to risk going to jail or worse, to lay my hands on my worst enemy? Not funny, Jesus. No thanks. I think I'll pass on that one. But the vision persists. It doesn't stop. Jesus doesn't take no for an answer. Ananias at first resists the idea that someone like Paul could or should be chosen by God. This isn't the kind of guy you want on your team, God. He's not right for the job. He resists the idea that someone like Paul could be loved by God or healed by the power of God. Paul is just not Jesus's type. He's just not the good material for this kind of work. He's too sinful. He's too angry. He's too misguided. He's too dangerous, and he's got it all wrong. He's committed too many errors for Jesus to choose him for this work. But God is not thwarted by the wayward life choices of Paul or by the protests of Ananias. God persists. In an ancient world where power and greed and corruption have pitted people against one another and pressured them to choose sides and spit venom at their opponents, God persists. in the heart of an angry, single-minded man with a laser focus on eliminating the people he decided are his enemies, God persists. And in the mind of a believer who is not quite ready to risk his own comfort and safety to reach out to someone across the spectrum of belief and behavior from himself, God persists. God persists. The vision persists. In the vision, as Ananias argues with Jesus about Paul, Jesus lets Ananias in on the end game. That same man who has poured his heart and soul into hatred and destruction will now pour his heart and soul into building communities of love and forgiveness and hope. And if it makes you feel any better, Ananias, he's going to suffer the same struggles and the same pains that all who have chosen to bear the name of Christ have suffered. In this moment, God transforms Ananias's great fear into great hope. God pushes Ananias so far outside of his comfort zone and challenges him to reach out and touch the last person on earth he ever wants to be near. Ananias gives in and trusts the vision God has shared with him. He goes to Paul, he restores Paul's physical vision, and the rest is history. Can you imagine how that moment must have been for him? To go put himself in the presence of the man who has come to town to hunt him down, to lay his hands and offer healing and hope to the last person he could ever imagine God inviting into this story. And the rest is our story. We're here today because we are inheritors of this vision. Because we are called to take big risks and to follow Jesus to places we would just as soon prefer not to go. We're called to transform fear into hope and to trust God to do that in our lives. We're called to reach our hands out to the last people we could possibly imagine God might be calling. And just take a minute. Picture that person. Each of us will have someone different or a different idea of who those folks are, who are the last people we could ever imagine God would be inviting into this story. That's who we're called to reach out and lay our hands on. Indeed, the church may be one of the very few remaining places left in our present reality where people with different ways of viewing the world and different understandings of how things work and different ways of life still decide to come together and focus on what unites us. While the world is choosing sides, we still belong together. The United Methodist Church of Anoka has a vision of providing hope to our community. Guess where we have to go to do that? What do you think? We have a vision of providing hope to our community. Where do you think we have to go to do that? Oh, into the community, right? That's right. We have to go into the community, and guess who we have to seek out in the community? People who have lost hope. For if our mission and our vision is to provide hope to our community, we've got to get out into our community and find the people who have lost hope. Reach out our hands. Offer healing and a new way of seeing their reality, the world around us, and what it looks like to decide that we belong together. Like Ananias, we can expect that as a community of people committed to following Jesus, we will be challenged to reach out and offer compassion and healing and hope in a future in ways that stretch us outside of our neat, nice personal boundaries, our easy labels, and our preconceived notions. That's what seeing through the eyes of Jesus does to a person. It's counter to our defensiveness and counter to our desire to win and our desire to be right at all costs. It complicates our story because it reminds us of one another's humanity and dignity no matter what. I believe we are ready. I've been hanging out here for 3 weeks. I believe I think you've been ready long before I got here, so I'm really just reflecting back to you what I've already seen here. That we're ready to be able to see one another and our neighbors with Jesus vision. Does that sound good? Are you ready for that? You've already been doing that some? You want to keep doing it? And in our next worship series, which we're going to start next Sunday, it's called Equipped. We're going to spend some time building up our confidence and our trust that we are ready and able to do this hard work of being the church in this time and in this place, in this community. But meanwhile, for today, for this week, for the days ahead, may we see visions and dream dreams that startle us outside of our preformed opinions of who is right or wrong, good or bad, worthy or unworthy. May we see visions and dream dreams that open our hearts to new possibilities of what the church can be and become. May we see visions and dream dreams that spur us to action in our community and in our world, seeking justice for our neighbors. May we see visions and dream dreams that lead us to the most unexpected people and places where we will be surprised by God's powerful healing. And may we see visions and dream dreams that make us restless and save our lives, transform our spirits, and give us purpose and hope. Amen.